listening to the Dalai Lama chanting. Usually chanting is used to find inner peace and inspiration. We're going to talk about that on the show. Our guest is Dr. Brad Swift. His topic, Life on Purpose. I'm Sherry Edwards, your host for Sound Health on BBS Radio. And for the next hour, I'm delighted that you could join us for a bit of conversation about you and your health. We have a few announcements. I'll make them really short because I want to talk to Dr. Swift a long time. Because we started a little late. We had some technical difficulties, but his book is chocked full of information. So first announcement, the free online demo courses for vocal profiling are still ongoing. We're using your own voice and how to bring information to consciousness for a better life. So write to heather@vocalprofiling.com to schedule a time to be with us. And the news media is trying to bury Michael Moore's sicko film. Sicko is about our sicko health system. What better reason to go see it? And we're going to have a show about it in the next couple of weeks. And try to determine what he really wants to convey to his audience. And Harry Potter, the other end of the scale, is out. I love the fantasy. Both very good films. I think I'll go see them back to back. Just to look at what we've built for ourselves and what we can do if we just believe in a little magic. As announced, Dr. Brad Smith, Swift, is our special guest tonight. He's written a book called Life on Purpose. I would like to read a bit from his website about the book, and then we'll bring Dr. Swift on. He can tell us more. Okay, this is a quote. This is great. Are you one of the millions of people unclear about your true life purpose? Have you noticed that this lack of purpose results in your missing out on much of the richness, joy, and satisfaction that life has to offer? I'm being bombarded with emails already from this show. I'm going to go on with the quote. Are you one of the millions of people unclear about your true life purpose? Have you noticed that this lack of purpose results in your missing out on much of the richness, joy, and satisfaction that life has to offer? Dr. Brad Smith, welcome to the show, and thank you for taking time out of your schedule to be with us.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Our audience is a very savvy, ready to learn, ready to grow, to be the best they can be. Tell us about this latest book, Life on Purpose.
Well, Life on Purpose, Six Passages to an Inspired Life, is really a culmination of about 12 years of work that I've been doing both in my own life and with really hundreds of people as a life coach and specifically as a Life on Purpose coach. So it really outlines the Life on Purpose process, which is a proven, systematic, spiritually based and practical approach that has assisted thousands of people to clarify their life purpose and then to design a life that's consistent with that purpose.
How did you get from being a veterinarian to being a life coach?
Well, I had to go through a pretty dark night of the soul type of experience. I had started out wanting to be a veterinarian when I was about 6-7 years of age, and actually became a veterinarian. But I found that about the 12-year juncture in my practice, I had gotten to the point where I almost couldn't stand going into the office another day. The stress and strains of running my own practice had me just really burn out. And that burnout actually extended over into my personal life, where I felt really disconnected from the people that I most cared about. And it led me to eventually starting to abuse alcohol and then drugs to kind of numb the inner pain that I was feeling so I could get through another day. And I even got to the point where I seriously contemplated taking my own life before, luckily, I, with some help from very dear friends of mine, kind of woke up and realized that, you know, life just didn't have to be that hard. And, you know, some years later, kind of after going through the recovery process from that burnout, I reflected back to what was it that had made the biggest difference in what for me was a really significant turnaround in my life, even what I would call a transformation in my life. And I recognized that there were two primary things. One was that I had done the inner work to really get clear about what my own life purpose was. And the second part was that I'd done a lot of that work with coaches, with life coaches and business coaches. And so I eventually decided to marry those two things together, life purpose and coaching, and became one of the first life on purpose coaches on the planet.
If you wanted to do this from the time that you were seven, what changed? Was that being a veterinarian not like you supposed it would be?
Well, yes, to some degree it was. You know, it was, you know, I had a deep love and still have a deep love and compassion for animals. But, you know, I kind of lost sight of that purpose and that inner guidance. The hectic pace of running a practice, and I was in my own practice, you know, the financial strains, the staffing headaches, you know, there were just a number of things that in any business can kind of have you lose sight of your primary purpose of being there. You know, there's that old saying about sometimes it's hard to remember your primary aim was to drain the swamp when you're up to your rear end with, you know, alligators.
Yes.
It was kind of like that for me. I was kind of up to my rear end, and a lot of things that were taking me off a sense of real purpose and meaning to what had me go into practice in the first place.
So you loved the work with animals, but you hated the nuts and bolts.
Yes, and you know, even the nuts and bolts would have been fine if I had been able to really keep, you know, I can really keep that clarity of purpose itself. But so that was one of the reasons when I did finally, kind of by trial and error, you know, regain that sense of purpose and meaning to my life. When I looked around, I saw that there were a lot of other people. You know, I was in my 40s by that time, and I looked around, and there were other people in their 40s and 50s and even 60s and 70s who still seemed to be pretty, you know, unclear about their own life purpose. So I decided, you know, that there must be some better way. You know, I remember a time there where I was really clear that I wanted to express my own purpose by helping other people to clarify their purpose. And so I asked two questions. Kind of my inner guidance, as I think of it, my own relationship to spiritual being, to God. And one of those questions was, does it really need to take us all, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 or more years to get clear about our purpose? And then the second question was, isn't there some way to shorten that learning curve a bit? And it was actually from those questions that the Life on Purpose process, the foundation of it, started to come forth in a pretty rapid succession. Over just a matter of a few weeks, kind of the basic components of it came forth. And over the last about 11 or 12 years, it's kind of continued to evolve and become what it is today.
Well, I three questions here pops up. Did you just kind of walk out of your practice, walk out of your life? Was it like, chop, I'm doing something else?
No, it was a transition. You know, one of the things that I did when I did realize that I wanted to go on to move on to something else, and at that time a new part of it was to devote a good bit of my efforts to writing. I had really fallen in love with writing, and I'd had some early success writing magazine articles, and, you know, getting paid for it. And even though I wasn't getting paid nearly as much as I was as a veterinarian, it was still very rewarding. And, you know, also was enjoying, you know, public speaking. So I hired a coach. What I thought at that time, this was back in the late 80s, and business coaching really wasn't, you know, much known at that point. So the person I hired I thought was really just a business consultant, but she turned out to be a coach. And I hired her name was Judy, to help me build up my practice so I could go out the top, really, you know, having accomplished what I had wanted to accomplish in my profession. And, you know, we set some pretty lofty goals with some very specific results. And I thought, you know, if we can reach these at all, it's probably going to take anywhere from 3 to 5 years to make that transition out. And then we met and exceeded most of them in a period of about 18 months. And that's one of the things that really kind of awoken me to how powerful and effective this kind of a coaching type relationship can be, both in business and in personal life as well.
It reminds me of this idea, when people retire, I'll do this. When I retire, I'll do this. And by that time, you know, you're old and too old to enjoy. I don't want to say too old. That's silly because I'm 60. But I can see this in people around me that retired at 60, 65, and in a few years they couldn't enjoy much of anything. So what you're proposing is that we retire early and do what we want to do.
Well, you know, I don't mean this whole notion of retirement, I think, is in the process of a major relook in itself. You know, us baby boomers, I'm 58, and I think we're really redefining a lot of things about life because we're such a large population. And I think one of those things is the notion of retirement. I don't think people are looking, a lot of us baby boomers are looking for the conventional retirement where you're going to play, you know, golf or shuffleboard, you know, 8 hours a day. We're really looking for the what's next. Well, maybe we simplify our life, maybe we, you know, cut back on our schedule, but we still want something that's going to give us a sense of purpose and meaning in our life. And I think that's why the Life on Purpose book and the process is being so well received right now, because there's a lot of people saying, okay, what is next for my life, and how can I continue to, you know, have that experience of satisfaction and fulfillment that comes with living a life on purpose, as I describe it.
Do people really need a goal and purpose? Some people are very content to do nothing. I'm married to one, which is really something, I guess, to do nothing. And I mean, he just likes to read and lays around, and there really isn't a purpose to his life.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know that it's true that everybody needs one. I don't know that, you know, this idea of living a life on purpose really falls into, you know, like there's something you should have or that you need. It is a possibility, however, that I have seen time and time again with my clients and in my own life that it adds a whole new depth of richness and a whole new dimension to life. You know, this book is really ideal for people today who are tired of simply going through the motions of everyday life. Maybe they're feeling unfulfilled, or they have, you know, untapped potential that they want to tap into. So I don't know that it's for everybody. If you're kind of complacent and satisfied with being complacent, then that's fine. But I think there's a very significant percentage of the population out there who, you know, really wants to have that, you know, wants to be inspired out of bed in the morning. That they're not getting out of bed simply because they have to go to work to pay their bills or because they have to go to the bathroom. They want to have something, some purpose, some meaning that says, ah, yes, that's what I'm here for, and I want to get about, you know, accomplishing it.
In preparation for this book, I asked him what his purpose in life did. Did he have something he really wanted to do? He said, I just want to do what I want to do when I want to do it, which sounds okay with me.
That's right. It's certainly okay. Now, the other thing I think, Sherry, that I'd like to point out is in our Life on Purpose book, in the process that, you know, really is out, you know, it's outlined in the book, one of the things that we're really out to do is to kind of take a new look, you know, a new definition of what we mean by life purpose. You know, over 10 years ago when I was, you know, this idea of helping people to clarify their life purpose came to me, I had the opportunity, you know, kind of in an informal way to ask many, many people one basic question, and that was, what do you consider a life purpose to be? Because I knew however they answered that question would have a lot to do to determine how they go about answering the more personal question of what do you consider your personal purpose in life to be? And what I found was that there was a common theme to many of those answers, what has really become known now as the kind of our cultural perspective, and that is that many people view your life purpose or a life purpose as what I'm here to do. And we take the case that there's another possibility, because when we get caught in this notion that, you know, our life purpose is all about doing, what we often end up with is a life with a just filled frenetically with doing, but often still missing the sense of real joy and satisfaction and fulfillment that we know inherently should be available to us. So in the life on purpose approach, we suggest that a life purpose is more like this overarching context for your life that then has the power to shape your life each and every moment.
Like a plan.
It is like a plan. You know, one of the ways to kind of think about it is that we really do all have a plan, a reason for being. You know, it's not just the doingness, though. Another way of describing it is that it's like who we are as spiritual beings and what we came here to be and to experience. So it has more about the beingness of an individual. I mean, after all, we are called human beings, not human doings. Then, from that being, allow that beingness to shape what actions will be taken in the world. So perhaps, you know, perhaps I can give us an example to kind of take this, make it a little bit more practical and less theoretical. Probably the best example would be my own. You know, I've been coaching, you know, for about 22 years now. And I love coaching, but I'm also clear that coaching is not my life purpose. You know, I've been a husband. My wife and I just celebrated a couple weeks ago our 17th wedding anniversary. I love being married to Anne about 99% of the time. We won't talk about that other 1%. And yet I'm also clear that that's a role that I play in life and not my life purpose, as neither is my relationship with my 15-year-old daughter. I love being her dad, but it's also not my life purpose. So what I say my life purpose is to live an inspired and inspiring life of purposeful, passionate, and playful service. To live a life of mindful abundance that I balance with simplicity, and a life of spiritual serenity. Now I know for the listeners that can be kind of an earful, so I have kind of a Reader's Digest condensed version of that as well. For me, a life on purpose is a life of service, simplicity, and spiritual serenity. And so that becomes the overarching context of my life, which then can shape me as a father, as a husband, as a coach, as the founder of Life on Purpose. You know, as when I play volleyball at the local YMCA, it can literally shape my experience of each and every moment of my life.
Again, lots of questions.
Okay.
And things that it brings up. When you talk about Anne and you're happy with her 99% of the time,
mm-hmm.
I have seen and helped coach people that for that 1%, they want to throw it all away. They're not willing to talk about or work through or make some kind of compromises for that 1%. And I think that gets a lot of people stuck.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
And I also think that if I said to my husband, "You are not my life purpose, I want to do this and this," I want to say to him, "You are not my complete life purpose. These are the things I want to do." And I have a few, like riding a hot air balloon, which I've done, meet and talk to, and that sounds kind of crazy, but I just wanted to touch minds with a fish bigger than me. And I don't know why, just kind of a bizarre thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then ride a helicopter through the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
So I've done all that, but I come mind to mind with my fish. But you said you want to serve, be of service, have a purpose, and have spiritual serenity. And that brings me to a question that somebody just sent in.
Okay.
What does one need to have a purposeful life? People, pets, books, money, security, God? Do you have a number one issue that must be served first before a life on purpose can be lived? That's a good question.
It is. It is. And for me, it again, it comes back to, you know, this redefining what we even mean by purpose. You know, when we have clarity of purpose, as I often describe it, it's a part of knowing ourselves. You know, this greater context of our lives, as we describe it, is is composed of our vision for what's possible, the very core values, those things that matter the most to us, usually the intangibles of our lives, and the very essence of who we are as a spiritual being. And all of those different components kind of come together like, you know, like in a big mixing bowl. You mix them up, and then the kind of the bonding agent that gives your purpose the power to shape your life. There's a number of different ways of describing it, but it's kind of like the one of the ways of describing it is the attractive force of universal love, which for many people equates to their relationship to God or a higher power, or for others, their spiritual nature, their spirituality. And so when we do that inner work to get clear about what is that overarching sense of who we are and what we came here to be and experience as a life purpose, then as we stay awake and aware of that, then it begins to shape our experience of life, which includes all of our life. It includes our, you know, our decisions, our choices, you know, our many times where we even live, and obviously what we do and how we choose to express that purpose. So I think the most important thing is to get, you know, to have a, you know, to live a life on purpose is to do that work to get clear about, you know, who am I and what did I, you know, what did I come here to be and to experience, and then, you know, how can I, you know, how do I choose to express that out into the world? Would that be in the, it could be in the very same, you know, job or career, or, you know, same roles in life and the same relationships that you have now, but your experience of those relationships and that work could be completely transformed because you know that you're living true to your purpose in that day.
I have a question and a statement, and I'm writing questions. You're sending me all kinds of directions. You said three things: visions, core value, and what?
The kind of the very essence of who you are. You know, like, you know, what you know you can count on and that other people can count on from you. Like, for example, my wife, one of the essence of her is she has a deep sense of compassion, kindness. So it's kind of an essence of who she is. You know, so, mm-hmm. You know, it's again, you know, the, as many of the, you know, sages through the year, both, you know, religious sages and philosophers have said, you know thyself. So this is a part of, you know, knowing yourself to do that inner work. Who am I really? Not just who did I, you know, kind of convince myself I am, but what is the essence of who I am, and how can I be that out in the world and allow that to shape my choices, decisions, and my actions?
One of the things we do at the center is ask people, what are your values? And, you know, people, well, what do you mean by values?
Mm-hmm.
They're just stumped by that idea. And when I say, well, it's something you honor, and a lot of times they'll tell me truth. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Do you honor the truth? Are you always truthful? Well, no. Well, that can't be your first value. Because if it really is a value, you will honor it. I want to talk about the steps in your book that you put allow people to go through, and then I have a question from the audience here.
Okay.
Does your book lead people to a purposeful life, or is there an epiphany along the way? That's a good question, too.
It is a good question. It's a good. I think there's a number of opportunities for epiphanies, or as I call them, you know, powerful insights along these six passages. You know, it is a guided tour, so to speak. You can think of it this way. I often think of, you know, this whole journey that people can go on as, you know, this journey along this purposeful path between wherever they're starting from, you know, however clear or unclear they are about their purpose, however on or off purpose their life is, to where they ultimately see what's possible, where they're crystal clear about their life purpose and their life is a reflection of it. So between those two points, there's this purposeful path. And you can think of the life on purpose process and the six passages as kind of a roadmap along that path itself. And along that roadmap, there can be a number of different places where people can have very, very powerful insights and epiphanies into the nature of themselves. know, one of the places that we most consistently hear people comment, you know, that they've, you know, made such a difference in their own life was in passage number 3, which is really the process of uncovering what has been shaping your life when you're not clear about your life purpose. See, we take the view not only do you have a true life purpose, I sometimes like to describe it your true divinely inspired purpose, because it is based in universal love. But we also have this second purpose that kind of is what is given to us in our life in early childhood, as we're growing up, from the time we first get language up until probably about mid-teenage years. And we term this the inherited purpose because it's something that often feels like it's something we were born into. And it can, you know, begin to get formed kind of unconsciously during that formative years whenever we feel threatened or unsafe. And what happens is this inherited purpose gets formed kind of quietly in the background of our awareness. And then if we allow it to, it will continue to shape our life as adults, particularly, again, whenever we feel threatened and unsafe. And, Sherry, you know, I think you'd agree there's a lot of things right now in our world that can have somebody feel, you know, threatened and unsafe. So there's a lot of the world and a lot of individuals that spend a lot of time being, you know, shaped out of that sense of fear, lack, and struggle of the inherited purpose itself. So one of the biggest places of epiphany is when people, as they're going through this life on purpose process, they uncover their own inherited purpose and can see it clearly, like, oh, wow, this is what's been shaping so much of my life. Again, maybe an example might be, again, take it out of the theoretical and make it a little bit more real. You know, my own inherited purpose began to get formed at around 6 or 7 years of age, when very unexpectedly my dad, at the age of 43, died of a massive heart attack. And since he didn't expect to die so young, he left his wife and 2 young sons with no savings, no real life insurance, anything like that. And for the next several years, we really struggled to, you know, make it in life and kind of get our lives back together. And so during that time, my own inherited purpose became, I have to be smart and know all the answers, or pretend that I do, and I have to work really, really, really hard just to get ahead so I won't be poor and so people won't leave me. And it was that very inherited purpose that then formed a lot of the next several decades of my life, to the point at about 37 years of age, although I was very successful on the outside as a, you know, prominent veterinarian, prominent member of my community, and my inner life was so bankrupt that I was seriously contemplating taking my own life. That's how powerful an inherited purpose can be when we don't, you know, uncover it so we can begin to be responsible for it.
I am trying to weed through some of these emails. people, if you could keep it a little short. Dr. Swift has some wonderful information, but 3 pages of an email of what you're just talking about here, about moving from a place of unhappiness. And there's 3 or 4 here, and I just don't know which one to read first. So I'll just go with them as they came in.
Okay.
What does it cost to have a life on purpose? I'm not talking about money. I'm not happy with my wife or family anymore. To have my life on purpose, to fulfill my purpose, to do what I want to do, I would need to leave them. I can't do that, so I go on day after day feeling trapped. Suggestions, ?
Wow, what a great question. It is an interesting way of looking at it, that to live your life on purpose, it does cost you something. Not necessarily monetarily speaking, but it does cost you something. You have to give certain things up. And one of the things that you have to give up is this kind of, you know, a sense of victimhood, you know, that you can't do such and such because of. You know, whenever we say, you know, we can't do something because of, and then we put it out there in some external thing, we give up our power and we move from being, you know, a really responsible person to being somewhat of a victim. So I don't know. I think, you know, before I would make that decision that I can't really live my life on purpose, you know, in my current marriage and relationships, I would make sure that I had done that inner work to really get the clear sense of what is that life purpose. And again, remember, we're not talking about it as, you know, your job or your career or some primary role, but this overarching meaning of your life. And once you're clear about that, then just start being that and living true to that. And then, you know, if it's meant to be that you're not meant to continue with the current people in your life, then that all gets sorted out kind of in the process. Yeah, I remember, you know, several years ago, one of the clients that I coached through the Life on Purpose process got very clear about her life purpose, and she was very enthusiastic about it. And she was kind of lived out in the Midwest and had been married for, 20 or 25 years, as I remember. And she tried as she could to enroll her husband into kind of joining her on the path. And just, you know, even though he, by his own admission, was not happy with his life and not particularly happy with their relationship, he was so resigned about it, he just couldn't get interested. So eventually, you know, she did leave him and separated and went and joined the journey. But all along the way, she kept, you know, inviting him to be a part of it with him, you know, with her. And, you know, he chose not to.
That comes right along another email. It's not in line with what's going on. But she says, I'm so unhappy that my husband won't talk to me. He won't hear anything that makes me unhappy. We live in sub-housing. I guess subsidized housing. We live in sub-housing. He won't work. I'm pregnant. Are there any secrets to bringing him along?
Well, I think, and I look at that, the thing that comes to my mind, I don't know if this will help this lady or not. I certainly feel a lot of compassion for her and what she's sharing. There's a principle that I have operated from for the last, 20 years or so, and certainly has done a tremendous amount in my own relationship, and that is that anything and everything can be resolved through communication. And that's more like a place that I stand, not so much like it's the truth, but it's a very powerful place. If you can stand there, like anything and everything can be resolved through communication. And so if something's not being resolved, in other words, you know, they're not, you know, communicating, then that's what's missing. And remember, the communication is two-sided. You know, it's speaking, but it's also listening. And I know for myself, I'm great at the speaking end, but I have to really work at the listening. So maybe there's something in there, perhaps really speaking her truth and then listening very attentively to what is it that has him, you know, not be engaged in, you know, following along with where she wants to go in life.
I think there's a fear as I read her email. Which amazes me, if they're so poor and they live in sub-housing, how she's got email. But she just has some fear of not being with them. But often people don't realize that people can listen, but they don't have to respond.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like people are really freaked out by, if you tell somebody you love them and they don't tell you back, they get freaked out.
Right.
I remember a time when my husband came out of the bedroom and he was wearing a suit and a tie that just really didn't match. And I said, are you really going to wear that suit with that tie? Kind of questioning. And he said, you, Miss Frump of 1969, are going to tell me how to dress? really, really biting back at me because he had already made the decision to wear it. But, you know, he never, ever wore that suit and that tie again, ever. So he did listen. He just didn't acknowledge me.
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes you just have to scoot by those.
Yeah.
We have lots of emails coming in, but we have gone through four of your steps. We went through preparing for the journey, starting on a purposeful path, uncovering what's been shaping your life, clarifying and polishing your true inspired purpose. I think we've sort of covered those, yes?
We've touched on various parts of those, yes, and we can certainly, you know, come back to them if need be, sure.
Learning the tools of living on purpose and mastering the tools of living on purpose. Do you want to talk about all of these as a group, or do you want to answer some email? There are some really good ones here.
Well, I'd like to go back and make one comment about the last email and what you were just sharing about the fear. You know, one of the things that I have found to be most valuable in my relationship with Ann is we have both done this work of clarifying our life purpose, which includes this all-important step of uncovering our inherited purpose. So we now know who we really are. In other words, I know what my wife's life purpose is. She knows what mine is. And we also know what is that kind of blind spot, that fear, lack, and struggle based inherited purpose. So when that crops up, as it still does, even though we've been doing this work for over 10 years, you know, when our life starts to be shaped by the inherited purpose, then we can allow each other the room to kind of move through that and to support each other in not staying stuck having our life shaped by that fear, lack, and struggle. So if there's any hope there, you know, for the person the previous email, it might be to, you know, take herself through the, you know, life on purpose process, you know, pick up a copy of the book and go through that process and see what the fear, lack, and struggle is that shapes her life. And, you know, certainly invite her husband to come along on the journey as well, but whether he accepts or not, she can make a huge difference in her own life by finding out what is that underlying fear that shapes much of her life.
I think some people don't know the difference between being alone and being abandoned.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's,
you know, there is that distinction between being alone and being lonely. You know, mm-hmm. I love being alone.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I feel lonely when I'm alone, yeah.
Four or five questions here.
Okay.
Which politician do you think lead a purposeful life that is compatible with the rest of us? Who gets to say if your life is okay, if their life is okay with the rest of the world? Whoa.
I'm not quite sure how to respond to that one. I'm not a very political animal, so, you know, I don't know. I know, you know, some of the figures, and I don't know that they're necessarily politicians, but some of the figures that to me clearly exemplifies a purposeful life, you know, Gandhi, you know, is one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mother Teresa is another. People who, you know, they were clear what they valued. They were clear what that vision was that they were here to express and help fulfill on. They knew who they were at the very essence of their being so powerfully that even though they've moved on, their own life purpose, their own vision, continues to, you know, enhance the world and make an impact.
Do you equate a purposeful life with an authentic life?
Yes, very much so. I think there's a very close correlation. You know, when you really get in touch with who you truly are, rather than who you thought you were, you know, the inherited purpose is kind of this lie that we've told ourselves about ourselves and about life for so long we came to believe it. So when you kind of get clear about that and kind of set that to aside, then you can get into the real essence of who you truly are, and that is the makings of a very authentic life, a life of what I call ultimate integrity, where you're living true to who you truly are, and your life is a reflection of that.
I'm going to change the subject here.
Okay.
Totally. Well, two odd things. Do you believe in reincarnation? If we don't do well here, can we make up for it in another life? If that's so, then why not just do what you want, get your own way, don't bother with what other people want for you or from you?
I don't know. If I believe in reincarnation, I believe in the possibility of it. But I don't know that I want to count on it. In other words, I want to do the best I can in this lifetime in case there isn't such a thing as reincarnation.
Does this question remind you of a 20-year-old recalcitrant teenager? you know, we've not given out the phone number. I guess everybody's jumping in and doing this on the radio at VocalProfiling.com. We don't have a lot of time left, but the phone numbers here are important to us. So
okay.
Toll free 877-876-5227. And then in Canada, 888-815-9756. There's a direct line, 530-8763-222. I am not able to monitor sound health at soundhealth.org. Most of these are coming in through radio vocal profiling, which people have gotten used to doing. But I put a plug in there for the numbers.
Yeah.
That just feels like a teenager that wants their own way and have this entitlement kind of attitude.
Yeah. Again, I think if each individual does that inner work, and I know it's hard to do it sometimes, you know, find the time to carve out the time, but really get into a sense of, okay, what am I really here for? Not again as the doingness, but as this essence of who I am, these core values, these intangibles that matter the most, and this vision for what I see possible in the world. And, you know, that then, if you allow that to shape your life, then that's what's going to create a world on purpose, as more and more people do that. You know, allow that universal love that wants to, you know, come out and express itself to do so in each individual.
I'm going to take a couple more questions, and then I want to ask you about what people can expect when they come to you or read your book.
Okay.
This is kind of a sad one. How do you live a life on purpose when you have just been told that you have only 6 months to live? Why should I buy your book? Is six weeks of an inspired life enough?
Well, remember, it's six passages, so how long it takes you to go through the process, I don't know. But, you know, I don't know, obviously, the details, but, you know, there's a country western song about, you know, live like you were dying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I often have listened to him thinking, you know, that's really what it is to live a life on purpose, to live it fully, to live true to your core values the most fully over that 6 months. And who knows, you know, how many people, you know, out there on Earth have gotten, you know, prognoses like that, and, you know, 10 years later they're still living a fulfilling life. So I don't know that I would, you know, accept that necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I would live that next 6 months to say, okay, how can I have this next 6 months be so fulfilling for myself and those around me that I go out as a shining star?
An inspired passage. Mm-hmm. So I read a book once. I wish I could remember the name of it, but it was about a nun that went out in the middle of the jungles and was acting as the medical provider there. And this reporter was talking to her and said, aren't you afraid you're going to get something and die out here? And she said, well, no, not really. But besides, I consider that death is God's reward for living a life.
Mm, yeah. Wow.
In reading that one little passage, it really changed my ideas.
Yeah.
And my mother was going through her transition at the time.
Mm.
And was very helpful to me.
Yeah.
And then this reincarnation question comes right in with that, too. You know,
yeah.
If you believe in that kind of issue, and like you said, hedge your bets. Why not believe? We could talk all day about reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a last question, unless we get some more time, and we've only got 8 more minutes. I'm assuming there is a transition phase. One just can't pick up and walk out. Do you suggest one ooze or jump into your program?
Well, you know, there's three ways that you can, you know, once you really have done the work of the first four passages of clarifying your life purpose and uncovering your inherited purpose, then the last two passages is really about how do I design my life to be a reflection of this life purpose. And there's at least three ways that I know of doing that. One is the dynamite approach. That's where you just kind of, you know, blow up your life. You know, you leave your loved ones, you quit your job, you sell your home, and you move to India or something like that. You know, the other approach is kind of a more of a hammer and chisel approach, where you kind of say, okay, I'm going to chisel this part off here and chisel this part here and add this. And then the third approach is kind of the polishing cloth approach, where, you know, each day you take a little extra time to be aware of what your true purpose is and allow it to shape your life. And, you know, I don't believe my job as a life on purpose coach is to tell people which of those approaches, you know, is best for them. There are some people that have a life that probably they're ready to blow up. And if that's the case and they're willing to, you know, take on the side effects of that, you know, the effects of dynamiting your life, then go for it. But for most people, I'd say, you know, usually kind of the hammer and chisel and the polishing cloth combination will be a much smoother transition. You know, again, I've been living, you know, endeavoring to live true to my own life purpose for over 10 years now. And, you know, there are still places that I have to carve out, and, you know, it's an ongoing process itself. It doesn't end after the end of 6 weeks and you've gone through the life on purpose process. You know, passage six is where you master the tools for living on purpose, which are outlined in passage five. And that's a, you know, a lifelong endeavor. You know, we continue to master our life.
Tell the audience how your book and the exercises in there and your coaching and your e-course all blend. Is it, you need all three, you need one, and then your blog, too, about those options for people.
Yeah, we have many options. You know, our number one kind of product is the Life on Purpose process, and we've tried to make it available in as many different forms as possible so that people can choose which form works best for them or where they want to start. So we have a little community of Life on Purpose coaches that can help guide you through the process. You can do that in combination with the book. You know, about three or four times a year, we take a group of people through the Life on Purpose process through classes that are conducted by telephone, so you can call in from anywhere in the, you know, in the country or even the world. We have an online version of the program that we often use by itself or to supplement, you know, individual coaching or the group coaching or whatever. But, you know, at our website, lifeonpurpose.com, there's a number of different choices on how, you know, you can go through the Life on Purpose process, either on your own or with assistance, you know, in a group setting or, you know, individual coaching. And, you know, we really want people to not just buy this book. I want people to buy it. I want them to read it. Most importantly, I want them to do the exercises that are in the book. That's where the real difference will be made. And one of the reasons, a couple of things that we've done to help support that is, one is we offer anybody who buys the book free coaching. You know, they can go to a special place on our website, special page that's not public, and they can sign up for a free coaching class to kind of jumpstart them onto their path. The second thing is we really recommend people doing it in groups. You know, there's a group right now in one of our local church that's going through the process of about eight people going through the process together with their books, with a facilitator that, you know, has gone through the process, and, you know, do it as a group because it's a lot more fun, more engaging, and more powerful, and also you won't get, you know, bumped off the track nearly as easily.
So people can get your book on your website?
They can go to Barnes & Nobles and get it. They can go to Borders. They can go to Amazon. You know, they can, you know, many of the local bookstores will have it, or they can order it. You know, it's out there in the, you know, distribution of as you know, any other book is, and they can also go to our website, and that'll forward them to a link to where they can buy it online.
Well, your blog that's there, can they start by asking questions there?
Yeah, that's what the blog is there. It's so people can find out more about me, and, you know, am I really living my life on purpose, and, you know, am I an upright guy? And, you know, the blog is there to help inspire people, you know, to take, you know, small steps along the way and to ask questions and to engage in this whole notion of, you know, your life on purpose itself, yes.
So you start where they are, and eventually a lot of your people end up being trainers for other people.
Well, some do. You know. Again, one of the things that, you know, oh gosh, back in 1998, I think it was, you know, we got very clear that this was, you know, this whole notion of life purpose was really a worldwide question, and there were tons of people really wanting to have some assistance in clarifying their life purpose. So we saw that my wife and I realized that we needed to kind of replicate our efforts. So we created a coaches development program. And so one of the other things that we do once or twice a year is we take a group of people through and train them, to be life on purpose coaches as well.
How can people get in touch with you? Through the website?
The easiest way is to go through the website itself, and, there's contact information there. They can email me, they can call. We're really here, to purposely, passionately, and playfully be of service.
Well, it sounds like it's a very practical, down-to-earth, do-it book. I would want people to remember that if they want to do something, they will, and if they don't want to do it, any excuse will do. If you're saying with your words that you want to change, then here's the opportunity and the way
to take some action, yes.
And your website, once again?
LifeOnPurpose.com. And remember, it's never too early in life or too late in life to really bring that sense of clarity of purpose to their life. So begin.
Thank you for being with us. We are out of time.
Thank you for having me, Sherry.
You are very welcome. We'll have you back.
Please do. I love it.